The Guardian.
Welcome to The Guardian Long Read, showcasing the best long-form journalism covering culture, politics and new thinking. For the text version of this and all our long reads, go to theguardian.com/longread.
The murder that shook Iceland. In a country with one of the lowest murder rates in the world, the killing of a 20-year-old woman upended the nation's sense of itself. By Zan Rice. The main shopping street in Reykjavik is called Laugavegur, the way of hot pools, because it was originally used by women hauling laundry from the town to the thermal springs 2 miles away. It cuts across Iceland's capital from west to east, with the Atlantic Ocean below, and above, the bone-white Hallgrímskirkja church looming over the city's brightly coloured roofs like a tower from Tolkien's Middle Earth. It was a street that Birna Brjunsdottir knew well. A vivacious 20-year-old woman with auburn hair and a sharp sense of humour, Birna grew up in the suburbs a 30-minute walk away. She liked music, everything from hip-hop to folk, and she liked to drive. And so, in the summer of 2016, she embraced the Icelandic pastime of rundtur, cruising slowly down Laugavegur in her father's car with her friends, windows open, speakers blaring, past the boutiques and coffee bars and tourist shops selling soft toy puffins and knitted jumpers. That winter, when the sun appeared for only 5 hours a day and the snow piled deep on the nearby mountains, Birna had been enjoying the nightlife around Laugavegur. After finishing work on a Friday, she would often play cards in a pub with some friends, and then, after midnight, when people in Reykjavik finally start to party, they would go dancing, as they did on the evening of the 13th of January 2017. Self-assured and carefree, Birna was one of the first people that night to get up and dance on the stage at Hurra, a popular live music venue and club. When her friends decided to leave at 2 a.m, she told them she would stay on. She left the club just before closing time 3 hours later. She bought a falafel pitta and started slowly walking up Laugavegur, which is brightly lit at night with glowing storefronts and lampposts every 10 metres or so. She was walking alone, which was not unusual behaviour in Reykjavik, even for a young woman. More so than in most other countries, Icelanders feel they know their own people. It is a peaceful place, where entire years have passed without a single murder. It was -9 Celsius with the wind chill, but Birna seemed unperturbed. She wore Dr. Martin's boots, regular black ones, not her knee-high pair with the glow-in-the-dark skeleton foot on the side, black jeans, a grey sweater, and a black hoodie draped over her shoulders. Her hair hung loose, and a pair of white earbuds dangled around her neck. She was drunk, dropping coins at one point and bumping into a stranger on the pavement. She ambled past the yellow and red awning of the Lebowski Bar, inspired by the Coen brothers' film, and a coffee and waffle shop on a corner where a narrow lane led down to the sea. And then she disappeared. When Birna did not show up at work on Saturday morning, her friend Maria raised the alarm. Birna was always on time. They worked in the fashion section of the Hagkaup department store and had known each other since primary school. They were close friends who used to watch Britain's Got Talent and go to music festivals together. Maria called Birna's mobile. It was off, and Birna's mobile was never off. Maria contacted the girlfriends Birna had been out with the night before. They had assumed she had gone back to her father's house, where she lived, but she was not there. Maria then called Birna's mother, Silla Hreinsdottir, who was worried by the news. Her daughter was independent and strong-willed, but also responsible and always let her parents know where she was. That evening, after filing a missing person report with the police, Silla posted a message on Facebook saying that her daughter had not come home from her night out or been heard from since. "Dear friends, it's not like her that we can't reach her. Please share and let's find her. Silla." Within a few hours, the post had been shared thousands of times, but there was no word from Birna. Her mother stayed awake all night, calling the emergency services every hour, sometimes every half hour, to see if they had any news. At 9 a.m. on Sunday, there was an update from the police. Before Birna's phone was turned off or ran out of power, at 5:50 a.m. the day before, it had pinged a mobile tower in an industrial area in Hafnarfjörður, a port town 6 miles south of Reykjavik, known for its lava fields and Viking festival. Hreinsdottir drove there with some relatives and several of her daughter's friends, knocking on doors and calling Birna's name. By the early afternoon, with the light fading fast, Scylla was desperate. Her daughter had not been seen for nearly 36 hours, and she was convinced something was horribly wrong, but there was still no official search. Without evidence of foul play, the police were reluctant to act. But the media had picked up the story, and when the two main television stations called, requesting interviews, Scylla agreed. The mystery of the young woman who had disappeared from Reykjavik's best-known street appeared on the Sunday evening bulletins. With a small, mostly homogenous population of 340,000 and a high degree of economic equality, Iceland is one of the world's safest nations. It is the only NATO member without a standing army. Gun ownership is high. There are an estimated 90,000 firearms in civilian hands. But the weapons are purchased for hunting rather than self-defence and very seldom misused. Violent crime is rare. Between 2000 and 2015, there were an average of just 1.6 murders a year, with most of the perpetrators and victims young men known to each other. In 2008, there were no homicides at all. Police are not armed, and the Reykjavik Force's Instagram feed shows officers eating ice cream, sledding and posing for selfies. The feeling of security is bolstered by Icelanders' tendency to look out for one another, a tradition that dates back to times when close collaboration was essential to make it through the long, brutal winters. Detective Grímur Grímsson did not watch the television news that Sunday night, but as he was finishing dinner with his wife, his phone rang. It was his supervisor telling him about the missing woman. Soon after, he received a second call from the police headquarters in Reykjavik asking him to come in. Although his sister, Vigdis, is a well-known novelist in Iceland, Grímsson, 56, was a private person who liked to be, as he put it, without a face. In truth, he has the perfect face for a detective, raptor-like, with his swept-back hair, blue eyes, stubble, sharp nose, and two deep lines that frame his mouth in parentheses. His 30 years in the police force had not been spent eating ice cream. In the 1990s, he had been based in the northern Westfjords region near the Arctic Circle when several avalanches struck, killing more than 30 people. In early 2009, during the financial crash, he joined the Special Prosecutor's Office and spent 6 years building cases against the managers and traders whose market manipulation and fraudulent loans helped bring down Iceland's three biggest banks. Only in November 2016, having missed the faster beat of regular police work, had he returned to the Reykjavik force. Driving to the police station that Sunday evening, Grímsson was not overly worried. Each month, several people are reported missing in Iceland, hunters and hikers in the country's hostile interior, youngsters running away from home or involved with drugs, people with mental health problems or Alzheimer's, suicide victims. In urban areas, young people reported missing usually turned up quickly after having slept at a friend's house, as Birna often did with her female friends, or hooking up with someone for the night. At police headquarters just off Laugavegur, Grímsson was briefed on the case. Officers had collected a sample of Birna's clothing from her father's house to give the scent to tracker dogs, which had been taken to the spot where she was last seen. Reykjavik had thinner CCTV coverage than many European capitals due to the low crime rate and a hostility to surveillance and other crime prevention measures in a society that largely polices itself. In public discussions about the need to be prepared for terrorist attacks or to tackle the underworld, a common refrain was, "That kind of thing does not happen here." But officers had been able to piece together grainy footage showing Birna's movements after leaving the club on Saturday morning. Grímsson watched her drop the coins and bump into the stranger before walking past the Lebowski bar. But in footage from the next camera, one short block away, there was no sign of Birna. Either she had gone down the side road or had climbed into a passing vehicle. Scrutinising the video again, Grímsson and his colleagues noticed a small red car, a Kia Rio, travelling in the opposite direction to Birna. It drove past the Lebowski bar less than 30 seconds after she had appeared on camera there. Had she got into that car? It was possible, the officers thought, but the video quality was not sharp enough to identify the occupants or the number plate. And when police checked the National Vehicle Database, they found more than 100 cars of the same make, model and colour. At 2 a.m. on Sunday night, Scylla and Birna's father, Brian, who were divorced but on good terms, arrived at the police headquarters. Scylla pleaded to be taken seriously and for an immediate search. Birna had no reason to go missing, she insisted. She was close to her family and was not involved with drugs or depressed. One of her friends described her as a happy pill because she was invariably so upbeat. Nor did she have money worries. Her income from her department store job was more than enough, she had told her mother. What was more precious was time. Time spent with people she loved and doing the things she loved. When Grimson showed them the CCTV footage, Scylla was furious that they could not identify the red car's number plate. "Can't you find it, like in the movies?" she said. "It doesn't work like that," Grimson replied. The idea that everyone knows everyone in Iceland is a stretch. But mention one Icelander to another, and they will probably know someone who knows them. There is a strong feeling that every person is a valuable part of the community, and that when assistance is needed, you step up. Everybody here does things that are not paid, whether it's singing in a choir or organising a sports team, said Lilja Sigurðardóttir, a leading crime novelist. It gives us an inflated sense of our own value and importance. It's not always helpful, but it can be beautiful. By Monday afternoon, with no further leads, the police sought to tap into that spirit, calling a rare press conference to appeal for information that could help locate Birna or identify the driver of the red car. Despite feeling that the police were still treating her like a hysterical mother, Scylla agreed to appear beside Grimson, who had been assigned to lead the case. She told reporters that she feared her daughter, who loved speaking English and travelling, she and Maria were planning a trip to New York in 2 months, might have stopped to speak to tourists on her way home. She added that Birna had recently joined Tinder after breaking up with her boyfriend. Grimson gave an update on the search, which was being led by the Icelandic Association for Search and Rescue, ISAR, a sprawling network of well-trained emergency response volunteers. Its roots go back 100 years, and its continued existence reflects the reality that the main dangers in this island nation come from the harsh natural conditions rather than from other people. Generally, having ordinary citizens, as opposed to ISAR teams, involved in a search for missing persons in Iceland is a hindrance, because you have people who don't know what they're doing, according to Guðbrandur Örn Arnason, the organisation's project manager. But just a few hours after the press conference, late on Monday night, it led to a breakthrough. Two brothers in their 20s, with no connection to ISAR or to Birna, went looking for her in Hafnarfjörður, where the last signal had been picked up from her phone. On a whim, they headed to the harbour. Between the road and the sea was a fenced-off area with 3 large oil storage tanks, and next to it an open patch of rough ground littered with building supplies. The brothers decided to look around. Alongside some pipes, they spotted a pair of black boots. The missing person appeal had described Birna's clothing. The men googled Dr. Martens, and seeing a resemblance to the boots they had found, posted a photograph on Facebook. Officers rushed to the port. The boots, they quickly ascertained, belonged to Birna. As divers plunged into the icy waters and drones hovered above, Grimson's officers pored over CCTV footage from the docks. They soon spotted a red Kia Rio entering the harbour shortly after 6 a.m. on the Saturday morning. The car parked alongside a 65-metre fishing trawler, the Polar Nanok, sailing under Greenland's flag. A man exited the passenger door and walked slowly, drunkenly, onto the ship. The car then drove off. This time, the number plate was legible. It was a rental vehicle which the company said had been hired by a crew member of the Polar Nanok, Thomas Müller Olsen, a 25-year-old man from Greenland. He had returned the vehicle at lunchtime on Saturday, and it had since been hired out again to a young family. Police impounded the car. It was obvious that it had recently been cleaned. The family's son, sitting in the back, had complained of the strong chemical smell. On closer inspection, officers found traces of blood on the back seat. Since Iceland lacks a sophisticated forensic crime laboratory, a sample was sent to Sweden for analysis along with Birna's DNA. The hunt was on for Thomas Olsen, the man seen walking from the car to the ship on Saturday morning. Unfortunately, the trawler had set sail on Saturday afternoon with both men on board. By the Tuesday, 3 days after Birna disappeared, the Polar Nanok was many hundreds of miles away, fishing off Greenland. Since leaving Iceland, Thomas Olsen and his companion from the car, Nikolai Olsen, a fellow Greenlander, no relation, had seemed their usual selves. But then Thomas, who was described by his crewmates as likeable and easygoing, received a message on his phone that made him visibly agitated. A newspaper reporter in Reykjavik, who had learned that the Polar Nanook had been linked to Birna's disappearance, had discovered a Facebook group used by the crew and sent a speculative message to Thomas asking if he knew who had rented the red Kia Rio. Thomas, who had gone pale, showed the journalist's message to the ship's captain, who told him he did not have anything to worry about if he had not done anything wrong, and gave him some sedatives. For Grimson's team, the pursuit of the two sailors presented a major logistical and diplomatic challenge. A Coast Guard helicopter had flown four police officers to a Danish warship, the Triton. Because the Polar Nanook was a Greenlandic vessel in Greenland's waters, the plan was to sail to Greenland, an autonomous territory of Denmark, collect local police officers there, and take them to the Polar Nanook to make the arrests. Grimson's concern was time. The longer the suspects were at large, the more opportunity they would have to destroy evidence and coordinate stories. Then Grimson received some news that allowed for a swifter and simpler solution. The captain of the Polar Nanook, who had read online that the ship had been linked to the disappearance and was concerned his men might be implicated, had decided to sail back to Iceland. He and the senior crew agreed they would tell Thomas and Nikolai that the engine had malfunctioned, necessitating the turnaround. The captain also turned off the Wi-Fi so the two men would not be able to read the media reports about the case. Though Iceland does not have special forces, it does have an elite counter-terror unit within the police called the Vikingasveitan, or Viking Squad. Early the next morning, Wednesday, six members of the Viking Squad boarded an A332 Super Puma helicopter and flew out to meet the Polar Nanook as it crossed into Icelandic waters. Although the weather was bad and the sea rough with 8-metre waves, the officers safely rappelled onto the deck. Thomas and Nikolai were arrested and confined to their cabins. In 12 hours, the Polar Nanook would reach Hafnarfjörður.
This is the audio long read, and we'll continue the story after this.
By now, all of Iceland was following the story with an increasing sense of foreboding. Parents who had never before needed to explain the dangers of crime to their children struggled to answer their questions about the missing young woman and the sailors. In the cafes and bars of Reykjavik, people checked for updates on news sites and swapped theories about what had happened. Other instances of violent crime, rare as they were not mysteries that needed solving or that required manhunts. This one was unfolding like the plot of the noir novels that have become so popular in Iceland over the past decade. It represented the ultimate fear in our society. A young, innocent woman targeted in a downtown area, said Helgi Gunnlaugsson, a sociology professor at the University of Iceland. And then the suspects were outsiders. That only intensified it. The strong public reaction was mostly well-intentioned, passing on potential clues to the police, empathy for Birna's family, and appreciated. The National Broadcasting Service, RUV, had even postponed the airing of the second series of the BBC drama The Missing, about a girl who disappears, out of respect for relatives and friends of Birna. But with so many people playing amateur detective, wild rumours were spreading online. Late the previous night, Grimson had sent officers to Hafnarfjörður to dispel reports on social media that a body had been found in a lake. Now there was fresh speculation that Birna was alive on the Polar Nanook, and that several other abducted women had also been found on board. Grimson, whose composure, focus and openness when updating the public had endeared him to many Icelanders, appealed for calm and urged people to avoid mob fever. With the Polar Nanook just hours away, the harbour at Hafnarfjörður was sealed off to keep the public at a distance. The port was blanketed in snow, and red and blue uniformed ISAR volunteers quietly continued their search for evidence. More than a dozen police vehicles were parked in a line on the dock with their lights on when the ship finally sailed into view at 11 p.m. on Wednesday night. You had this feeling like all the police cars in Reykjavik were there, said Snerus Sindradottir, a reporter covering the case for Fréttablaðið, Iceland's biggest newspaper. Viking Squad officers led Thomas and Nikolai off the ship in handcuffs. It was a really powerful moment, said Sindradottir. There was always this chance that we had lost the suspects. After days of unrelenting bad news about the case, Icelanders at last had a small measure of relief. That the arrested men were foreign provided an extra level of comfort to some, a blessing that allowed us to be united as a people, as one person put it. The police convoy sped to the headquarters in Reykjavik, where questioning began immediately. Forensic tests in Sweden had revealed that the blood in the car was Birna's. But both men, interviewed separately, denied causing her any harm. Their accounts of what happened the previous Friday night and the first part of Saturday morning until Nikolai was dropped off at the ship were similar. The Polar Nanoq had arrived from Denmark on the 11th of January 2017, a Wednesday, to pick up fresh crew members, and on the Friday, a few of the men remaining on board decided to go for a night on the town before heading back to sea. Nikolai took a taxi from Hafnarfjörður to Reykjavik and went for a drink in the English pub just off Laugavegur. He paid 2,500 kroner, £18, for a spin of the Lucky Wheel, a game of chance with a grand prize of 8 beers, which he won. By the time Thomas had driven the rental car to the capital and joined his crewmate, Nikolai was already very drunk. They later moved to another bar before going for a drive and ending up on Laugavegur, where the red Kia Rio was captured on CCTV at the same time as Birna disappeared. Both men claimed that two women had entered the car at that point, although Nikolai, who said he fell asleep on the way to Hafnarfjörður, recalled nothing about them. Thomas told police that after dropping Nikolai off at the Polar Nanoq shortly after 6 a.m, he had parked at the end of the harbour and climbed into the back of the tiny car with the two women, one of whom was Birna, who he claimed to have kissed. He said he dropped the women off at a nearby roundabout after about an hour. To the police, Nikolai's vagueness seemed plausible. From the CCTV footage at the harbour, they could see how drunk he was. But Thomas's account was full of holes. At 7 a.m. on Saturday, when he was seen on camera driving away from the harbour, his phone went off for 4 hours. The car was not seen on any surveillance footage again until 11 a.m. when Thomas returned to the port. He said he had slept in the car during that time, although the odometer reading suggested he had taken a long drive. Soon after, he was captured on video buying Ajax cleaning liquid, clothes and plastic bags at a supermarket, and then scrubbing the inside of the car. He claimed to have been trying to remove vomit from the back seat. But after the rental car was impounded and the blood sample taken for testing, a forensics officer sprayed the interior of the vehicle with luminol, a chemical that glows bright blue when it comes into contact with bloodstains, even those that have been cleaned up and are invisible to the naked eye. The car lit up, the officer would later testify. Other evidence also weighed against Thomas. The doctor who examined him noted scratches on his chest, indicative of a struggle. Meanwhile, officers searching his cabin in the Polar Nanoq had found 23 kilograms of hashish, with a street value of £1.4 million, which he had brought onto the ship in Denmark. More importantly, they discovered Birna's driver's licence, folded and discarded in the ship's rubbish tip. The licence was sent to a crime lab in Norway for fingerprint analysis. Grimson was certain that Thomas was responsible for Birna's disappearance, but he was still no closer to finding her. On the morning of Saturday the 21st of January, a week after she vanished, the biggest search operation in Iceland's history began. ISAR alone deployed 835 volunteers and 87 vehicles, an extraordinary response in a small country. Across the island, people waited anxiously for updates. "Today, she is our sister, our daughter." That became the mantra, said Gudbrandur Ern Arneson, ISAR's project manager. "We don't live in a society where we tolerate a 20-year-old woman being abducted in the night." The vast search area included Iceland's southern peninsula with its lava fields, snowy hills and frozen lakes. Saturday's search yielded nothing. Around noon the following day, a Coast Guard helicopter flying low over the desolate coastline neared the bright orange Selvogsviti lighthouse. There is no beach there, only a berm of large black stones littered with fishing buoys and driftwood from distant lands. Kelp bobbed in the shallows and the rock pools were glassed with ice. An officer on board the helicopter spotted something near the water's edge. It was Birna's body. Shock quickly gave way to grief. Memorials were held in Greenland, whose citizens had followed the case with horror and shame, in Denmark and all the main cities in Iceland. In Reykjavik, thousands of people walked together down Laugavegur, leaving candles and flowers at the spot where Birna disappeared. Her funeral was held at the Hallgrímskirkja, the biggest church in the country, with the president and prime minister among the 2,000 mourners. Birna's friends carried the white coffin. The songs included two that she had introduced to her mother in her last months, Jerry Rafferty's Right Down the Line and You by English musician Keaton Henson. If you must die, sweetheart, die knowing your life was my life's best part, go the lyrics. For weeks, Birna's mother was too devastated to hear the details of how her daughter had died. In March, she asked to meet with Grimson and the chief of Reykjavik Metropolitan Police, who were eager to give her some closure, and told her what they knew. Though Birna was found naked, there was no evidence of sexual assault. She had been struck in the face and strangled, at the harbour, police believe, when Thomas was seen on camera entering the back of the car before his phone was turned off and he drove away from the port. But she was alive when she was put into the water. The autopsy revealed the cause of death to be drowning. Nikolai had been released after 2 weeks in custody when police concluded he was not present when the crime was committed. Despite the evidence against him, Thomas did not confess, sticking to the same story through 9 police interviews. Police still had no idea why Birna got into his car on Laugavega or why he killed her. On the 30th of March 2017, Thomas was charged with murder and drug possession. When his trial began in August, the prosecution's case was even stronger. His DNA had been found on the laces of one of Birna's boots, and Norwegian forensic scientists had identified his fingerprint on her driving licence. Entering the court in Havnarfjörður, Thomas covered his face and sat facing away from the gallery. He confessed to drug possession, but not to murder. Speaking in a low voice and without emotion, he spun a completely new story. Instead of 2 girls in the car, now it was only 1, Birna, who he said had suddenly climbed into the Kia Rio as he drove along Laugavegur. Thomas said he had stopped the car and got out to have a pee in Havnarfjörður, at which point Nikolai drove off with Birna, returning sometime later without her to pick him up. To the astonishment of everyone in court, Thomas was trying at this late stage to pin the murder on his crewmate. A month later, the 3 judges convicted Thomas of both charges and sentenced him to 19 years in prison. Thomas has appealed against his conviction, asking the court for an independent assessor to analyse whether it was possible for him to have disposed of Birna's body, given the ocean currents and the mileage on the rental car. It is now more than a year since Birna died. Has her murder changed Iceland? Superficially, no. There has been little new animus towards outsiders, even fishermen, and young people have not stopped going out or getting drunk. On a clear, cold night in early March, the bars and clubs in downtown Reykjavik were busy, with British and American tourists watching Champions League football in the English pub, and black-clad locals packing into Hurra for a heavy metal party. But ask any Icelander, and they will tell you something has shifted. This case will be remembered, said Vigfus Bjarni Albertsson, the chaplain who conducted Birna's funeral. It changed us a bit, our feeling of security. There are now more CCTV cameras in Reykjavik. The argument that more surveillance is unnecessary has been lost. Young women in particular are more wary, more careful and conscious of the need to look after one another. Catching a lift from strangers after a night out had become common in recent years, especially through a Facebook group called Skutlara, those who give people a ride somewhere. After Birna's death, a female-only version of Skutlara was established. The biggest effect may be on the national psyche. The murder coincided with a period of strong economic growth driven by outside forces, a tourism boom, an influx of migrants to take up low-level jobs, and foreign investment. I think many people feel overwhelmed by how fast the country is changing from a small island nation to something more cosmopolitan, said Egil Bjarnason, a local correspondent for the Associated Press. Birna's death somehow encapsulated people's unease about this new era. Grimson has moved on from the first and possibly only murder case he will ever lead, one that turned him into a hero in Iceland and ensured he will never be without a face again. He is now based in The Hague, as Iceland's representative at the EU's Agency for Law Enforcement Cooperation. I recently met him at the police headquarters in Reykjavik when he returned home for a few days. It was 5:30 p.m. and most of the officers had gone for the day. Grimson walked me to his office, which he has kept, pausing along the way to point out the view of the bay and the mountains beyond. He said he was proud of the investigation, but wishes his force had been quicker to respond to Silla Hreinsdottir's desperate pleas for a search for her daughter. One of the things I have been thinking a lot about is this. Should it be 24 hours to respond in missing persons cases? Or more subjective? Cilla did not attend the trial and later made an appeal in the media for people not to refer to the murder as the Birna case. "I don't want this evil act to be blended with her name," she told me when we met one afternoon in her flat. Birna was a beautiful soul. She did not deserve this. A picture of Birna hangs from a chain around Cilla's neck. Her focus now is keeping the positive memory of her daughter alive. In the living room, one entire wall is devoted to Birna. There is a large collage of photographs of her, as a mischievous child with pens pushed through her hair, swimming with dolphins in the Bahamas on a family holiday, on the beach in Hawaii, outside church. Next to the collage hangs the dress Birna wore to her brother's confirmation, and beneath the photographs is her makeup table with her brushes on top. She had often talked about moving to the US to train as a professional makeup artist for films and the theatre. Like her daughter was, Cilla is generous and warm. As the pale afternoon sun streamed through the window, she laughed loudly while watching the videos that Birna had recorded and uploaded to her YouTube channel, miming to rap songs, doing crazy dances. Birna's cat, Drakey, Dragon, who she loved dearly and always defended despite its habit of terrorising the other family members and her friends, skulked around the flat. And like her daughter, Cilla speaks her mind. Stepping outside onto the balcony for a cigarette, she said she still has faith in God but is mad at him. When she was praying for her daughter's safe return, where was he? Although she is grateful for all the public support, she rejected an idea to have an annual Memorial Day in Birna's name to promote unity, and dismisses the notion that some good has resulted from the tragedy. There was no purpose in this. It makes me crazy when people talk about the country coming together. It's a fantasy. This beautiful country in the frozen north where everybody comes together, I don't think it's healthy for Iceland to think of itself as special in that way.
For more Guardian long reads in text and a selection in audio, go to theguardian.com/longread or find us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/theguardianlongread.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.